Does your body hurt more than it used to after a long day? You're not getting old. You're not out of shape. You're just absorbing too much impact. Every step on hard floors adds up, and eventually your feet, knees, or back start calling the shots. That's not age. That's physics. Most shoes aren't built to handle a full day of impact. Until now. Stand Plus Energy Recovery Footwear is engineered to dissipate shock and reduce stress on joints. Their dual-density system gives you cushioning where you need relief and structure where it matters. They're accepted by the American Podiatric Medical Association, HSA and FSA eligible, and worn by over 100,000 people who feel the difference every day. If recovery is becoming the limiter, it's time to change that. Go to standshoes.com and experience real relief in every step. Does your body hurt more than it used to after a long day? You're not getting old. You're not out of shape. You're just absorbing too much impact. Every step on hard floors adds up, and eventually your feet, knees, or back start calling the shots. That's not age. That's physics. Most shoes aren't built to handle a full day of impact. Until now. Stand Plus Energy Recovery Footwear is engineered to dissipate shock and reduce stress on joints. Their dual-density system gives you cushioning where you need relief and structure where it matters. They're accepted by the American Podiatric Medical Association, HSA and FSA eligible, and worn by over 100,000 people who feel the difference every day. If recovery is becoming the limiter, it's time to change that. Go to standshoes.com and experience real relief in every step.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Wrestling Art with Chris Things.
Do the hammerlock. I do the hammerlock. Do the hammerlock, you turkey necks. Yeah, do the hammerlock. I do the hammerlock.
Hi, friends. Welcome to a little bit of Wrestling Art with Chris Things. I am Chris, your host and pal, and I'm back for another Match of the Week edition of the podcast here, and to try something a little bit different for the intro monologue. No longer an intro monologue, I've got a Match of the Week guest already here with us, joining us. Joe, welcome to the show, my friend.
Chris, as always, thank you for having me.
Oh, mate, I'm stoked we got to have you on here today. I mentioned to you before we started recording, I'm on a bit of a manic day today. I am recording this podcast as we speak to get it posted up tomorrow. I then have a painting to do, which I have planned it out, and I've painted the background, but I have done none of the rest of the painting, and I need to drop it off tomorrow night.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm glad that you haven't, you know, compressed the creative process for yourself at all. But, you know, pressure makes diamonds, isn't that what they say?
I think so. I think there's something nice about when you're just doing sitting down and doing a painting, like, start to finish in one sitting, not too much time to you know, fuck about with it and obsess and all this kind of thing. Kind of know what I'm doing, and I hope it's going to work out. I also just yesterday have dropped off another painting for the upcoming Borolf show at Netherworld, this Radioactive Ants number.
Yes.
So I'm very excited to see what everyone else has done. I'm going to be there tomorrow night. I'll check it all out. That's opening night at Netherworld. It's 6 p.m. for anyone out there that feels like joining us. Yeah, it was super fun. I'll keep it a bit mysterious, but you do have some sort of Radioactive Ant original Chris Things painting to look forward to.
That's excellent news. I'm very happy to hear that. And, you know, happy for everyone. I guess Bolf will, if this comes out in time, people will be able to go to Bolf on the weekend.
Yeah, I'll be there. I'm going to check out as much of it as I possibly can. Brisbane's only Radioactive Life Forms Film Festival. No way I was not going to be enjoying the heck out of that. But mm-hmm. I've seen Ben from Netherworld has been fashioning up a giant ant for the event in question. So I'm very excited about that too.
Yeah, some of the stuff that Ben and that those guys have done for various other premieres. They did a King Kong, a gigantic King Kong head, making these things from scratch out of fiberglass in this case and some other case, like just truly, truly incredible the efforts they're going to for some of these premieres that 2-Bit Movie Club do here in Brisbane. They really bring it to life.
Oh, man, I'm I always love it. I always try to get along to BORLF. So this is the changing acronyms thing they do every year. So each year we get a brand new version of what BORLF is going to be. And, yeah, I'm very excited about this. They're screening them as part of the proceedings, which I think is the one I'm probably the most looking forward to. But a lot of retro B-grade giant ant movies promises to be a great time.
And also the other one that looks very promising is the Joe Dante matinee movie.
Oh, yes. Called, that's how I'm starting called matinee. My
day, man. Yeah, very good.
What's his name from Big Lebowski?
Which one from Big Lebowski?
John Goodman? Yeah, John Goodman, right?
Yeah, right. Cool. Very cool.
Yeah, very. I've never seen that before, so I'm very excited for that. But and then we have a gig that we're going to later on that evening, so you'll be able to see how much life I have left in me after all this.
I know, you might be running on fumes on Saturday night as well. That's very possible.
Yeah, and I'm starting the day as well for anyone in Brisbane in keen on some toy themed art. Working Title Brewery in Newstead have another art exhibition happening. Starts at midday, so I'm gonna try to make an appearance there as well. This is gonna be the craziest day, but this is the Mechanical Pen and Working Title Brewing Co. Batteries Not Included toy based group art show. So it's going to be a combination of actual sort of like custom created like resin toys and stuff and actual like paintings and all sorts of things. It's been put on by a dude that I got to meet as part of the Oddities and Curiosities Expo. We actually were stall neighbors back in the Melbourne leg of that thing. Mechanical Pen, very, very interesting dude, great artist. I'm stoked to get to be a part of this exhibition. A little bit left of center for me. I don't think I've made any paintings that are toy themed yet, but I have some ideas, Joe.
Well, again, so this is coming in this Saturday, so you've got to get the art for that done before Saturday as well.
So this is the one that I'm going to be painting we finish the podcast.
Okay, right. I was like, oh, my God, Chris, not a third. Please, for the love of God.
No, I dropped the Netherworld one off last night. This is it.
Okay.
Yeah, I like a challenge, so we can do this. But, if anyone's interested in that, it also will be up for the rest of March at Working Title on their art wall as well. So very excited about that. We also had, I think this is the first time I've done a podcast since we had the latest in our awesome Cult Lucha events at Netherworld, our classic B-grade Lucha Libre monster movie screening series. Our second one took place. This was the Santo versus the Mummies of Guanajuato event. And similar to the first, I just had so much fun doing this thing.
It was heaps of fun, and like the first one, a really big turnout, heaps of people there at Netherworld on a Sunday night to come and enjoy it. And And I have to say, I think I might have enjoyed this one even more than the first one.
You know, you're not the first person to say that. I was interested to ask you this specifically because I was talking to Andrew, you know, my partner in crime, Trash Videos, Andrew Leopold, who I team up with to do these screenings. And I was talking to him and he said he got the vibe that people enjoyed this one more. And we were discussing it and we were saying maybe Is it because it was a bit more on the trashy, campy side of things as opposed to the first one?
I think that's part of it. I think it also, it just felt like it moved along a bit more. Plus you got, I mean, from my perspective, you got to have three luchadors appear in it. And, I mean, the family dynamics of Blue Demon's adopted son and what he's doing at work.
We need everyone to know that that is not his real child. They made that very clear several times.
No, and Blue Demon wants the child to know that. Wants Gustavo or whatever the... or and I can't remember the child's name, but... I think you're hitting on that. It was the... there was more humor in it, intentional and unintentional.
Unintentional humor.
Yeah.
That kind of makes it better, right?
It does. No. And this one also wasn't dubbed, whereas the first one was dubbed, right?
Well, it's so weird that you say that, because I honestly cannot remember whether it had subtitles or was dubbed.
Like, I think the first one was, because they keep calling him Samson, remember, instead of El Santo?
Yes, I do remember they changed the name for that one to make it a bit more easy on a mass American audience. I'm not actually sure on this one, but whatever it was awesome. I loved the fact that 90% of the movie we just get Mil Máscaras and Blue Demon, and then right at the end we get a little bit before it of seeing, like, Santo was on his way. We get to see him, like, driving on the highway a little bit in his little roadster. And then legit, he arrives right at the end of the movie, just like, all right, guys, get the guns. And then he just, like, lights all these mummies up with fire guns and saves the day. And that is that. So awesome.
Yeah. And it's even, in some ways, it's even more mysterious than that, because he doesn't count the mummies first and doesn't use the guns, doesn't mention the guns. But the second time he's like, hey, guys, just go get the guns. And you feel like saying, Santo, why did you not just get the guns the first time you encountered the mummies?
I was wondering, is there a missing scene where Santo finds some old wise oracle who imparts a lesson to him that the way that you destroy these mummies is through fire? And then he's fashioned up a bunch of, because these seem quite customized. Where did he get these fire guns is one of my big questions.
Well, he's got access to some technology that even we don't have in now, because his guns are like the size of a pistol, yet work as a functioning flamethrower. so with no fuel that can be discerned. I really enjoyed it. The first one, please don't. Anyone listening, don't think I'm, you know, disparaging from the first one. We all loved that too. And it had its schlocky elements to it too. The bat transformations and the bat vampire luchador henchman running around was also great fun. I just think you had the first one, you had one luchador. If you've got three luchadors, surely that makes it, that can only improve things. And also some of those outfits of, like, the luchadors at rest, you know, because Santo in the first one is always seen wearing his cape or you know, in his tights. But, you know, just to see Blue Demon leafing through a photo album in, like, quite a nice knitted blue short sleeve sweater, but, of course, remaining masked the entire time, or Mil Máscaras wearing like a smoking jacket in various scenes. So, I mean,
his spiffy, like, Mexican short sleeve button up shirts.
Yes.
I was quite taken by that. Even in the final scene, he has his tights, but he's still wearing this spiffy Mexican shirt. And the whole time I was watching it, I'm just like, man, where can I get one of these things? This is the height of fashion right here.
There is something about, like, and you painted and drawn some of these, like, there is something about that look of these really, you know, so over the top, well, not over the top, I get, well, they are over the top masks, but then combining that with just a suit or just some like normal clothes of the era. There's something about that look that just creates
turtleneck, some sort of velour, something
corduroy, bulk corduroy. Yeah, something about that. Just there's a magic to it.
I'm all about it. There's so many moments in this movie where I'm just like, man, this is just screaming to be, the source material for some future paintings or something. But we'll see how we go. I am aiming to have another solo show a little bit later in the year. So we got that coming up. I also can announce on here that we have our next a wrestling club is going to be coming back, Joe.
Oh, my God.
We're back. We're back at the scratch. I'm going to endeavor to keep this thing happening, you know, whilst we keep doing the cult lucha. Perhaps maybe more of like a bi-monthly thing for wrestling club. We'll see how we go for the frequency, but we're back on the Sunday nights. I think the Sundays had the best energy to it. You know, you're wrapping up the end of your weekend before you get into the work week, before you get those Sunday depressive thoughts coming on. You get to go out and drink some beer and watch some wrestling. So we're bringing it back. We're doing it looking the 29th, Sunday the 29th of March, back at the scratch. And I'm gonna have to put together a bit of a playlist.
That's very exciting. I'm very happy to hear that. I will be there.
Excellent. I love to hear it. we'll see how we go. But I'm excited for what 2026 has in store for Wrestling Club. I think we'll continue on with some of our old favorites, and we might branch into some new things. The possibilities are endless here.
The best thing about wrestling, there's so many rabbit holes to go down.
Exactly, man. But we have an actual series of Match of the Week to talk about today that took place, or at least one of them took place at the last wrestling club that we had, and this was the one that sadly was the first one that you had to break your streak for, Joe, and you weren't able to join us on this evening, which very much understood. I was sad to see you not be there for the evening, but I'm glad we get to chop it up about this match now.
Yeah, well, I am very excited because when I saw you do the original artwork for this, I tracked down the match and watched it, and then I got to watch it again today to refresh before talking to you. So what a great excuse to watch Stan Hansen and Kobashi duke it out.
Oh, my gosh, so good. Before I forget, I did have one thing to say here. Our next Cult Lucha event at Netherworld will also be taking place in March. We've got that one Sunday, March 22nd. Is going to be Cult Lucha Mexican Wrestling Monster Movie Madness Event Trace. So everyone come on down to Netherworld on Sunday, March 22nd, before the following week when we'll be back at Scratch for Wrestling Club. But now, in time for the match of the week portion of the podcast here, I may insert the music that we have for the intro. I normally do it because we record this separately. Today we're just going to start to finish. I may insert it at this point right now, or I may not. We'll see how we go.
But, okay.
Today we're talking about a series of delightful match of the weeks that I did think of you, Joe, for when I looked at these ones that we had coming up. I was like, who is going to have a full level of appreciation for Kobashi versus Stan Hansen, for a classic Bret the Hitman Hart mid-90s WWF championship match, and for a batshit insane great Sasuke match? I thought I couldn't think of anyone better for it than you in this one, my friend.
Well, that's very flattering. That's very flattering given the quality of these matches. I watched some of Elimination Chamber on the weekend, and watching these three matches was just a nice tonic to rinse myself of the Elimination Chamber thing that I watched. So it's like, you know, industrial sites where they have the eyewash instructions.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this felt like. Just rinsing this out of my eyes. So
what
thank
a
you.
Compliment. What, if I ever had a mission statement for what the match of the week is meant to be, those forcible eyewash stations to yes. cleanse your wrestling palate. I love yep. that. Fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it felt. In a best way, very yeah. clear.
So this week we've got a match of the week number 115 through 117. Kicking it all off with the aforementioned All Japan Classic. To me, one of the just all-time great matches from this like glory period of 90s All Japan Pro Wrestling. One of my very favorite Stan Hansen matches, also one of my very favorite Kenta Kobashi matches. This one took place on July 29th, 1993. It happened to be day 22 of All Japan's Summer Action Series 93. And it took place at the big show home of All Japan Pro Wrestling, Budokan Hall in Tokyo. And what a bloody match this was. It started out hot and heavy and somehow even took it to multiple gears above that throughout. And man, what were your initial impressions? Had you seen this one before watching it for this little homework practice here?
I apart from tracking it down when you did it for the match of the week originally, I don't know if I had or not, because I have watched other Stan and Kobashi matches, or I've watched this one through a big Stan Hansen phase where I just watched a lot of his matches and they all blurred together a bit for me. But I don't think so. I think the first time I watched it is, I think so I would remember some of the spots in it more clearly if I'd watched it before. So I think the first time I saw it was when you did it for Match of the Week. Yeah.
Cool. Because there are some very memorable spots in this, especially the finish, right? Like, I don't think
yes.
I'll ever forget the Stan Hansen lariat off of the Kobashi sitting on that top rope of the turnbuckle, and just the lariat from the outside in. Man, the level of intensity and violence in this thing, the amount that, like, because, I mean, this is already a bit into their series, right? Like, they've already had quite a few matches up to this point. So there is a pre-existing kind of Kobashi knows he's got to really bring it to Stan. And he kind of does that from the get-go, you know? He really, like, just rushes him from the start. And it almost is the point where you start to feel a little bit bad for Stan Hansen. You're just like, man,
yeah.
Kobashi's been real rude here to old Stan. And then, oh, my gosh, does he pay for it.
The yes, to your point, the match starts and Stan starts assaulting one of the people, one of the like dojo guys who's just hanging out around the corner. And that first kick that Kobashi hits him with, literally the first strike he hits him with, you can see the sweat fly off Stan Hansen's head. And then they're outside the ring, DDTs, open hand slaps back and forth between the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. Basically, the first half of the match pretty much is just Kobashi just belting Stan Hansen, which I wanted to say, like, it's one of those things too, like, for a guy who has such a reputation in Stan for, like, for dishing out so much punishment to guys in the ring, he can take it as well, but he just sells so well for Kobashi. Like, he just looks like he's getting pummeled the entire time. He doesn't, you know, no sell anything. He cops it all.
That's such a great point. A lot of these guys that are known for being the you know, big no selling assholes kind of thing, when you really look at it carefully, they actually are masterful sellers, but they mm-hmm. just require a certain amount before they're going to you know, they need someone to basically make it worth it. You know, I think of a guy like a Kawada, you know, or yeah, especially Stan. It's like, if he's going to sell for you, you have to earn that shit. And I think Kobashi definitely did here. But yeah, very, very selfless dude, much more than people think, Stan Hansen. And I think he obviously had a real lot of respect for Kobashi for this match to come off quite the way it did.
Totally. I think it helps probably that Kobashi's so big as well. You know, he is so Stan probably, I mean, I have no idea what he thinks, but like it's very feasible and plausible for someone of Kobashi's size that when he hits Stan Hansen with, you know, with a blow that it's much easier to sell because it's much more believable. But even like,
I think he did respect him a lot, though, because he did in his book, I remember, which I highly recommend everyone, Stan Hansen's book, fantastic read, but very, very complimentary of, you know, your Kobashis, your Misawa, your Kawada, your Taowei. Like, he really did think a lot of these guys that were you know, the pillars and carrying all Japan into the future at this point.
There you go. But it is still, even then, a couple of the DDTs that Kobashi does. I think, like, Stan really throws all of his, you know, body into it to basically almost go vertical and like a vertical suplex the way he sells it. And then, and I was thinking in watching this match, like, you know, we talked once about how Terry Funk has just a great expressive face, which is so helpful to like what he does. Stan does too, because he's obviously needs glasses so badly. Like he's often squinting and like, and sort of looking and has this. So when he's selling, he does have this sort of pained, almost confused expression on his face very naturally, but just a great, he's really great at selling so much of that first half of the match for Kobashi.
Excellent body language overall as well for Stan. Like the way he sells, like he does it with like his whole being. You know, that thing that they talk about of like selling in a way where you could see that from the you know, top of the rafters or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like in addition to these great facial expressions, it's like those little things like the sort of you know, clenching of his fists or just like looking like really annoyed when he takes a strike. Like it's just so good.
Yeah. No, he's really, I just wanted to highlight that in watching it this time, because again, that reputation is one of a bruiser who dishes out punishment and strong style and all that type of stuff. But he's like, he really is a master of, like, as you said, like you start feeling bad for him at a certain point in the match.
How the heck did this happen?
Yeah. But he does so much great stuff, you know, when he gets in some of those headlocks and he reaches up and he's trying to grab Kobashi's hair, you know, like all that type of stuff. Little things he does.
He does that great thing where I remember hearing Ricky Steamboat say one time in an interview, like, as a babyface, I mean, obviously Stan's not necessarily like a squeaky clean babyface like Ricky Steamboat, but when you're taking a heat from someone, you never want to be like a dead fish where you're just like selling and you know, just taking the guy's stuff and selling and selling and selling. Like Ricky Steamboat would say, like every third move, he would like do something to fight back or to like, you know, make it look like more of a fight, like that struggle kind of like thing. And you're not just like giving yourself to your opponent for the entire duration of the heat. Like it's your job to keep fighting back and to keep making him earn it. And that's really what I felt when I was watching Stan in this. Like every stuff he was taking, he would still be trying to fight back or make Kobashi's life as difficult as possible, however he could.
Yeah, well, there's that great, to that point, there's a great portion early in the match where Stan sort of is outside the ring, gets inside, and he sort of gets like a bit of a burst of energy. You think he comes off the ropes and you think he's going to hit Kobashi with something, but Kobashi like immediately counters. So there's like a little burst there, but you know,
he always does such a good job of teasing that lariat, right? Like he's you know, setting it up, and you know, you I feel like the fact that you see it like miss a few times, or he's like clearly going for it, but the guy's prepared, when you finally get it, it makes it all the more satisfying.
There's that great portion later in the match where he throws it, Kobashi ducks it. Like, he throws it and the crowd erupts. Mm. Kobashi ducks it and gets him into like a sleeper hold, like from behind. And it's just such a cool, it's so funny for such a, it's really becoming, the more I think about it, like such a great finishing move to have, because it can come out of nowhere. You can do it to anybody. Looks like death, but that Japanese crowd is so keyed into it that all he does, like, you know, the preamble is just, you know, he doesn't get into the corner and like wind his arm up and spin it in the air and all this. He just puts the, like,
no,
if he does it,
not the band to be seen here.
No, exactly. He just puts his utmost, and even that warm up is such a basic one, because what it's just readjusting his elbow pad to get a better, you know, which is normally slipped and slid all over his arm anyway because of the way the fight's going. So it's such a great finisher. And that one he does sometimes where he might have even done it to Kobashi before, where he misses it, the guy ducks it the first time, and Stan basically turns into a discus lariat and hits him with it on the way through, which is also great. And then my favorite, I don't know if it's my favorite counter, but one of my favorite counters, and this is the one where Stan's lying in the corner. Kobashi rushes at him, and out of nowhere, Stan kicks him in the face.
Oh, so good.
And I don't know if that's the one that gives Kobashi the big welt and black eye.
Oh my gosh.
And even that's a great look throughout the match. By the end of the match, Kobashi's side of his face is starting to well up.
Man, it's just a magical match. I really recommend everyone go out of your way to watch it. Like, it also is one where I'm like, this match and this whole series between Stan and Kobashi, it kind of like makes a lot of Kobashi's offense thereafter make a lot more sense. Like, sort of how much the lariat, you know, became such a big thing for Kobashi, and, you know, became his finish in his later years. We wonder whether that was like inspired by this series against Stan.
Yeah, that's a good point. And it's even interesting the way in which, you know, obviously the moonsault at this point is still a big thing for Kobashi, and the crowd's reaction to that.
It's such a great moonsault.
Yeah, it's really tight. But so there's all that stuff. I was trying to think of what else there was. You get to see Stan do a splash off the second rope.
Oh, yes.
which looks like it. I don't know how worked that one was. That just looks like Stan Hansen jumping on a guy.
Looks kind of like if you ever see a big boat in a like really choppy, stormy seas, where it just kind of like flies up in the air, and you're like, "How is this airborne?" That's kind of how I felt when I watched Stan come off the ropes.
The unsinkable battleship, isn't that what he's named? And I also think that Stan has one of the best, like, falling knees in professional.
Oh, so good.
It looks brutal. He doesn't, like, jump up in the air and do a flip or anything. It just, big dude just dropping his knee on you. And, I love the match.
Yeah, tremendous match. Tremendous fire from Kobashi. Tremendous violence overall. I thought the pacing of it was so great, and like we said, such bloody awesome, unique finish up on the corner turnbuckle, and the last sort of war of attrition that we got down that like final end of it. I thought was just, you know, sometimes you see a great finish like that, and then it's like, oh no, but then we, you know, go into the ring, and he gets a two count off of it, and then he like hits his standard finish for the actual win. This was just so perfect, and this was the finish. So I couldn't be more happy about that.
And you selected that obviously for the art as well, which is really cool.
Yeah, it was a tricky one to do with sort of the angle of the kind of, you know, the layout there and everything. Was it an unusual sort of like perspective to be going from? Because in All Japan, they have that kind of like hard cam that's on like that angle of the ring. And so it's up a little bit higher on the balcony up on Budokan Hall. So you get a bit of an elevated perspective of it. I remember just thinking it was so cool when watching it. So yeah, I did my best to recreate that. And it's always just such a treat to do Stan's incredible face and general girth and moustache and everything.
Girth is the word. He's a girthy boy. Two girthy boys, actually. Two barrel-chested men. So fun. Two
big old boys. And of course, I had to get the great senior referee, Joe Higuchi, in there. And Joe would go on to become in the later days or in the glory era of Noah, the elder statesman who would read the pre-match declaration for the title matches on these holy scrolls that were like just a really big part of the kind of ceremony of these big matches. So I always love seeing Joe Higuchi back in his refereeing days as well.
Yeah. And an amazing outfit that he's wearing, like looks like a jumpsuit. I don't think it is, but like the white shoes with the white belt. Yeah.
It's a classy look. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
All right. Now we jump on to our next match of the week, that being match of the week number 116. So this was the one that we had as one of the key matches for the Christmas edition of Wrestling Club. This one taking place at the In Your Health House 5 Seasons Beatings WWF pay-per-view from the Hershey Park Arena in Hershey, Pennsylvania. Took place on December 17th, 1995, so just before Christmas. This also happened to be the same pay-per-view where we got Balls Mahoney playing Santa Claus, who was a evil version of Santa, who it's one of the great ill-thought-out gimmicks that really just didn't have much of a place to go, but on this night, magical. This was the main event. This was the big one, the big rematch of, to me, one of the all-time great Bret Hart matches, and I would say the greatest match in Davey Boy Smith's career, of course, the big Wembley stadium bout between, you know, Bret and Davey Boy, and this is the rematch. So a lot of pressure on this match. It has a bit of a different dynamic as well, with Bret here being the hero, and Davey Boy being the bad guy. We've got Davey Boy's wife, Diana, who happens to be Bret's sister, which adds a different interesting dynamic to it. When all this was happening in the lead-up, I was very much thinking, oh, man.
Does your body hurt more than it used to after a long day? You're not getting old. You're not out of shape. You're just absorbing too much impact. Every step on hard floors adds up, and eventually your feet, knees, or back start calling the shots. That's not age, that's physics. Most shoes aren't built to handle a full day of impact, until now. Stand Plus Energy Recovery Footwear is engineered to dissipate shock and reduce stress on joints. Their dual density system gives you cushioning where you need relief and structure where it matters. They're accepted by the American Podiatric Medical Association, HSA and FSA eligible, and worn by over 100,000 people who feel the difference every day. If recovery is becoming the limiter, it's time to change that. Go to standshoes.com and experience real relief in every step.
Right, this is gonna be the classic WWF thing where it's like they just play up this kind of angle and it kind of takes away from the match. But I really didn't think it did. This just ended up being a fantastic match in its own right. Bret bleeds buckets. Mm-hmm. Much to Vince's dismay on commentary, which was quite enjoyable.
Yes.
But what did you think? Had you seen this one before?
No. Well, I'm at Christmas, I was watching on Netflix one of those things where they have a whole bunch of matches together of particular superstars. And I can't remember whether this was on it or whether it was a different match with Bret and Davey Boy, not the SummerSlam match, or whether it was a tag team match or something like that. But anyway, it was, it's funny you mentioned, because that's one of my notes I wrote was, you see, and obviously knowing from your art that the blade job was coming, I was like, all right, where's it going to come? And then he gets, Brett gets thrown into the stairs and you see, all right, it's about to happen here. You can see him, he's screwing around with something. Camera moves away. And then he does quite a number on himself because it is absolutely pouring out of him.
There is like from, a puddle so fast.
Yes.
On that outside ring mats. My God.
Yes. And then, and Vince, yeah, literally says, oh, we don't need to see that or something
let's not do any close-ups here, everyone in the truck.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which is, I think you said this once, it is one of those things about, for all his faults as a commentator, it is fun just to get that little bit of insight from having him on commentary, you know, and not having him behind the curtain, so to speak.
Anytime you have the booker or, you know, one of the key, you know, influences of the booking at the time, like doing the commentary, I always found that so fascinating because you can see the things that they play up in their voice being obviously a key part of something that is meant to be a focus in the match or meant to be a key part of the story. It's like you're kind of being guided through it by the narrator who wrote it in a way, which is always quite fascinating. I always thought the same thing when I used to love OVW back in the day when Cornette was still booking that place, and it just had just the craziest roster of next generation talent coming through. But Cornette would be on commentary for those shows, and he was obviously the booker, and he really would like hammer home certain things. So I just think it's quite fascinating, and just the era of Vince Jr. doing this play-by-play commentary that he often was not very good at in some ways, but he did have a weird magic about him, I thought.
Yeah. I like him when he goes into that high voice. He goes in like a weird higher voice at times, like, oh, my God. It's like, it doesn't even sound, because everyone's so used to the Vince McMahon impression's always like that. Especially when you listen to the wrestlers, like that gravelly sort of Vince McMahon voice that it sort of became in later years. But speaking of Cornette, Cornette's there as the manager for Davey Boy.
I thought a great pre-match interview that really, really hammered home all the things. And I thought Cornette especially really kind of like threaded it all together in a very good way.
Yeah, it's you see why he's paired with him at this point.
I don't think anyone in their life has ever said that Davey Boy is the greatest promo of all time.
No, he's English. He gets away with it probably a bit because of the accent. And you get the great little moment early on in the match where I can't remember how it is, but Cornette interferes and then he's like, what are you feeling me for? I didn't do nothing. They get the camera off him, which is fun. But the match itself, like, obviously two guys who just know how to wrestle each other so well. It's like just like a masterclass in the more technical style of pro wrestling, but like a classic of its era.
And it had like the drama element as well as the like excellent like technical wrestling as well. And also fascinating, you know, how they do a completely different match to the Wembley match, because you know it's obviously the kind of roles are reversed and we've got a different thing going on. So it's like they're doing the thing kind of like I always think, like the truly great movie sequels aren't just doing the same thing over again. You know, they're doing something totally different, telling a different story that's still amazing. And that's what I thought this was.
No, that's a good point. And not trying to your point, you know, depends on your view, but the easy thing would be like this time it's in a steel cage or this time it's in a ladder match. Do you know what I mean? And that's the other sequel analogy, which is like, oh, we did it this time. Let's just do it bigger. Everything bigger, everything, you know, more.
This time it's outer space.
Exactly. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you take them to a different location, and that makes it all different. But no, yeah, excellent match. The other thing is about, like, there's especially some great movement in the match, like the speed with which they run the ropes and the. I mean, I'm guessing that so much of that just must come from how often they work together, that knowledge of each other and the skill involved.
A lot of it that came out to me is like the this match was very representative of like the kind of Stampede wrestling, Calgary wrestling, like house style. Like if you ever watched some of that stuff, it was about that, like, you know, working with speed, but like crisp, and it had that similar kind of like flow to it. And yeah, like these guys probably wrestled one another hundreds of times, so it probably is like muscle memory in a certain element. But one of the things I thought was really cool about it as well, like one of the famous things about that Wembley match, right, is that apparently like Davey Boy is just off with the fairies. Like, I don't know what drugs he had done before that match, but like I always remember that story that, you know, Brett tells where right before the match, Davey's just like, bro, I'm fucked. Like, he can't remember like a single thing. And Brett's just like, just, you know, just listen to me out there. We'll get through it. And then ends up being one of the greatest matches of all time. You know, a lot similar to, you know, some of those like Kerry Von Erich classics that you hear about, where he's just like high out of his mind, but still just such a magical, instinctual wrestler kind of thing. And then in this one, you know, Davey Boy is clearly a lot more with it, and he really carries his share of the load. Like, I don't watch this match and just think that this is a straight up Brett carry job in any sense of the word.
No, not at all. You know, and just in his, I don't know, his facial expressions and his interactions, he doesn't, you know, he seems far more, well, he seems actually lucid throughout the whole thing, Davey Boy. But yeah, no, it's just, yeah, just really, they're a really good match as partners, as dance partners too. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Physically, yeah, it's just, it is sort of almost like a textbook pro wrestling match in so many ways. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it. And the art as well for it, I wanted to talk about, like, is that, did you, that's from the, because there's actually two parts in the match where they, it's looks similar. That makes sense. Like, there's one where they, towards the, there's the superplex off the top. But then before that, though, there's actually like they sort of run the ropes and sort of clothesline each other, but they fall also in a similar way.
Yeah, so, now that you're saying it, I honestly could not quite remember which one of those it is. The superplex is ringing a bell for sure. But I mean, the big thing was, like, in this match, you know, once the blood started flowing, you're like, all right, this is you know, definitely going to be the money portion. But again, thanks to Vince telling the truck to not do too many close-ups, it actually made it quite difficult to try to get one that really captured that bloody kind of like full-on thing. Like, there was a bit where they're on the outside where that had some great shots, but yeah, there was something about this when both being on the mat that I just thought was so great and dramatic. Like, all of the blood, like Brett's blood all over Davey, and old Earl Hebner doing the double count.
Yes,
I just thought there was so much to love about this, so I was like, man, all right, that's gonna be the one. But yeah, both have like such signature looks that I think helps as well when you're drawing both of these guys. Like, it's like they've got such classic, like their ring attire is just so distinctly them, you know, their general look and vibe. Like, two guys again that are really, really fun to draw and make art of, I think.
Yeah, it's funny you say that again about the, like, the blood, because, like, you know, not too, you know, really in terms of years, it's not too long after this we get the iconic Austin blade job where the blood's, you know, and you've done art of that, but that iconic shot of it dripping down his teeth, you know. And it's so funny that, like, not long before this, Vince is so allergic to that for purely for what he perceives as money reasons. And it'd be interesting, you know, if this match takes place 2 years later sort of thing, if it could have, like, what, how would they have produced it? How would they have presented it? That makes sense?
Yeah, because I still don't know whether, in like, this match actually took place during the Blade ban, you know, that we had, where, you know, I always love the story of all the guys that, like, got fines because they're like, you know what, this match just needs it. We gotta get some crimson here, and then they get, like, a big old nasty fine for doing so. But I think there are several stories of Brett, because he was, like, a lot more sneaky than, say, like, a Ric Flair with the way he would do the Blade jobs, where Brett got away with it at quite a few times and managed to convince Vince that it was just, like, a hard way, when clearly he, you know, did the deed. But I always loved that, like, guys that are just like, you know what, we're going to get a suspension or a fine, but it's worth it. This match needs some blood, baby.
Yeah, I wonder too whether is it also that Brett's like the champ, right? So, like, you know, Vince is a little bit, when you're the champ, you can get away with certain things that other guys on the roster just can't, you know? Mm. But yeah, it's a great match. It's a really, really great match.
Highly recommend it. If you never watched this one, you just thought it always might, you know, pale in comparison to the Wembley match, I'd highly recommend it. I think it stands on its own 2 feet. Works also completely in isolation to the other match if you just watch this one on its own. But yeah, really good match from, like, a period of WWF that I think a lot of people would just kind of, like, tapped out on, and when it sort of got its, you know, most lame in some ways. A lot of people kind of think of that, like, mid-90s period as, like, kind of the shitty point of WWF before, like, the Attitude Era came in and all that. But man, I reckon there's something about this period that there is some really worthwhile stuff to watch, and they had some pretty awesome guys on the roster as well.
Totally agree. It is funny though, that to your point, this is the same pay-per-view where earlier I think Triple H and Hillbilly Jim have, like, a pig pen match. So yeah, there's exactly slops being thrown at each other. So it's one of those things where it's like, it's, you know, in the retro, what's it, the revisionist history that WWE has, it's like, yeah, it was great with Hulk, you know, with Hulk Hogan and all this, and then it was bad, and then Attitude Era came, it was great again. It was like, well, actually, there was some great stuff happening in all eras, and even in some of those Attitude, which now people pump up, there's a lot of terrible, terrible garbage occurring at the same time.
And also, like, the wrestling, the actual quality of wrestling during the Attitude Era, generally speaking, sucked. Like, I don't know if that's, like, a, you know, an out there statement to make, but, like, I don't remember any matches from the actual Attitude Era, you know, short of, like, you know, Bret and Austin was kind of before what you would consider the Attitude Era, right? But during the actual kind of classic 98, 99, 2000 years, I can't think of many matches that are this good as this one.
Oh, no, maybe not as good as this one. I mean, the only one I really, I don't know if you even count this as the Attitude Era, depending on what you class it as, is I still really like the first Hell in the Cell with Shawn Michaels and Undertaker. Like, that's actually sneaky. Everyone talks about their WrestleMania matches, but that's actually my favorite of their matches. Is that, and it does though end with, of course, with, like, Kane coming in and ripping the door off and all that type of stuff. So it does sort of, you do get a schmoz ending, but the match itself, and that's, speaking of blood, like, Shawn Michaels gets busted up really good in that. It has, like, a decent scar on his forehead quite a while.
Yeah, there is some stuff, you know. Also, you know, that I'm not sure whether it was officially Attitude Era, but I remember loving those Mankind matches against Shawn. I think those were like, probably my favorite Shawn Michaels singles matches. Like, this side of a lot, actually.
This side of a lot.
This is what you get when you record a podcast at nighttime compared to my usual daytime energy, Joe.
That's fair. That's fair.
But with that, I think we jump over to our final match of the week here. Maybe the most unique match of the three, certainly in some ways. We've got match of the week number 117. This is the finals to the first ever Michinoku Pro Fukumon World League. That's the Masked Man Tournament. This was groundbreaking for its time. The first ever tournament of all masked wrestlers. And this is the big final. We've got the hero, the face of Michinoku Pro, Great Sasuke, in the final against his nemesis, Lucha Libre legend, Lucha Royalty, in Dos Caras, the father of Dos Caras Jr., also known as Alberto Del Rio. This one took place, the big final, on August 25th, 1995. It was a 28-day tournament. Man, that's a heck of a tournament right there.
Oh, boy.
This one was at the Aomori Prefectural Gymnasium, and I had not seen this before, you know, watching this on this particular week. I was in a bit of a Michinoku Pro Great Sasuke watching trip, rabbit hole kind of deal. And this match really surprised me. It went to places that I had no expectation that it would go to. What were your initial thoughts, Joe?
Well, I was really thrilled to see a Dos Caras match. At one of the most iconic masks in all Lucha Libre, and knew the name obviously, but I really, really enjoyed it. And you know, you said in your match of the week, you know, you really summed it up, which is starts off as this sort of Yave hold sort of style.
I was surprised to see how much Sasuke held up his end of the bargain on that, by the way.
Oh, yeah, and Cell's screaming his lungs out when he's in some of those holds. Something I always actually, I've said before, I think, but Japanese wrestlers, they will, I think some of them must have shout themselves hoarse in some of these matches, the men and the women. Will scream when they attack, will scream when a pin gets broken up, when they get put into a hold. I really, really appreciate it, and my hat's off to them. They're not just like they just mime like, what, that was a two count, you know? They're like, they're screaming because it's a fight. They're fighting for their life, or they're fighting for their championship. Great match, and then it escalates into more of Sasuke's like high flying style. The crowd's really great. Crowd's totally into it.
The crowd is just so hot. So an interesting thing is they actually face one another a couple nights prior to this within the tournament. So I guess before they both got enough points to where they go on to the big final against one another. And the other match, well, I would still recommend it, felt completely different to this. A lot more subdued. Crowd is a lot more like quiet. Definitely didn't have like the crazy levels that we got to in this one. A lot more of like kind of the hold for hold Yaveo style wrestling that we were talking about, which was like really, really cool to see. But yeah, this one, I think especially the crowd, you know, the crowd just feels so just vibing for this and so stoked to get to see the hero Sasuke, and they wanted him to win so darn much.
Except that Dos Caras gave him three of the most brutal power bombs I've ever seen. Gosh. One onto the concrete or the floor, and one in the ring, which looked just abominable. And then the finishing one, like the sit-out powerbomb, actually compared to the other two, was like No, he was already cooked.
He's already dead.
Exactly. Please. The other funny thing is the audio is, I think it's Dos Caras like being, oh, no. Like when he gets put into a hold, being like, you hear, no, which I really enjoyed.
Oh, yeah. I loved a few things that Dos Caras did in this. He really plays up the idea that he's eventually going to win this popularity contest.
Yes.
clearly, he is not. But he really wanted to give that crowd every chance they could to see if, hey, what about me, guys? Come on.
Hey, I'm here. Hey, it's me.
So much preening.
Yeah, very cool. His movement, I think him being a bit, you know, there's a good size differential between the two of them as well, which is really cool.
It's interesting seeing that size differential and like him being in a lot of ways kind of like the bully, but him bullying him through wrestling. Like it wasn't like he's just kind of the big dude that's just, you know, beating him up roughhouse style. Like he's actually bigger, but he's like also this supreme level in-ring wrestler. And so that I think makes for quite an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, because he springs off the ropes and does a lot of cool crossbodies and all of that as well. A lot of work to the outside. Is that really cool? Oh, the other thing I wanted to point out too, I really, really like is, you know, is it called like the Mexican surfboard where they put them up into the thing? Mm. Is, you know, tends to be they lock in the legs and they sort of just almost like slap them to be like, all right, give me this arm. And Dos Caras is quite clearly what he's doing is working the kidneys. You know what I mean? He's like, that's what he's supposed to be doing. And again, Sasuke sells that and screaming out like he's getting punched in the kidneys repeatedly. So I just thought that was a cool little element to how he did it.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it seems like so much of the stuff that he did with such like a menace to it, like more so than you usually see, just like almost like just being a dick for the sake of it, which I really enjoyed.
Yeah, and there's a great hold he does early, which is almost looks like a sharpshooter, but it's like a sharpshooter with no hands.
Oh, yeah.
And he does that.
Classic one.
Yeah. Yeah, that was really cool. Really cool match.
I really loved Sasuke as like the underdog through this, like through all of this, like being out wrestled, you know, to a degree and just being bullied around by this enormous legendary luchador. He just had such like, I think that's like ultimately Sasuke's like greatest like thing that made him, you know, one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. Like his undeniable heart that he had with everything that he did, and how you can't help but watch this and just be like, come on, Sasuke, you got this. Come on, man, let's go.
You can do it until you stretch it out of the ring after getting soundly destroyed. Yeah. It also fits with the more high risk maneuvers, right? Like he's got to reach into his bag of tricks to take out these people. He's got to do something. He's got to push himself. He's got to go Super Saiyan, you know, sort of thing to beat somebody, which is like a really cool storyline to have.
Yeah, I thought it was like very interesting the idea that, you know, they brought in this like lucha royalty, and he, I guess, part of the consideration of bringing over Dos Caras to do this masked man tournament in Japan was Dos Caras was not going to be losing this tournament. You know, got a bit of that Mil Máscaras family vibe of the. a certain way of doing business, which I respect. I thought it's so interesting that you bring this dude over. Sasuke is like the hero of the promotion, you know, the main face of the promotion. He's the biggest draw they've got. And in the end of their first ever big masked man tournament, it's Sasuke losing to Dos Caras. And I thought that was like so interesting because you read that and you're like, man, I'm not sure if that is a booking decision, you know, like probably would have made more sense for Sasuke to go over. But in a way, this kind of worked out even better because like, you watch this and after what you see, the ungodly punishment that Sasuke takes, and then eventually he just didn't quite have enough and he couldn't go anymore. But you kind of end up, when you finish watching this match, I feel like Sasuke like kind of elevated his status in losing, which I thought was quite unique. And I guess that's what happens when you take the kind of ungodly punishment. You got to respect it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think, no, he doesn't, yes, he doesn't win the tournament, but he doesn't walk, he walks out, well, he doesn't walk out of there at all, actually. He does get stretched, he gets stretched out of there with his head held high, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, it makes you kind of love him, like, to even more for just seeing his struggle, I guess.
Yeah. So, no, it really was a fantastic match and different. As a trio, I have to say, great trio of matches to like get to watch, all very different.
A bit of everything, I guess, right?
Yeah, like Wrestling Club, you know, like just
try for.
Yeah. Well, you succeed, but yeah, it's really fun match. It was great to watch, and now I'm gonna have to try and find more Dos Caras out there.
Yeah, I mean, that was honestly, I hadn't watched a lot of Dos Caras myself either. Like I've probably seen a bit of his older stuff, you know, when he's a bit more in his older years in like the early 2000s in Japan, but never a lot. Makes me really want to go back and, you know, see what kind of Dos Caras footage I can find, because he was very, very impressive here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Also, I feel like this is one of the earlier examples of the Sasuke that we would come to know and love in his later years, of the crazy Sasuke just taking the most ridiculous shit you ever did see. This may have been the start of it, Joe.
God, that power bomb on the outside. Does he take it from the ring? Or is that?
Yeah, the apron. It's off the apron, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's even worse. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's that horrendous power bomb that Stan Hansen does, the Kenta Kobashi, onto the exposed ground in that match. Mm. And then you watch this one, you're like, oh, God, this is even worse.
I didn't think anything would ever make that Cactus Vader powerbomb give a run for its money, but this match sure did.
Oh, and then he gets the second one in the ring and then the sit-out one, and you're like, oh, that's good, oh! yeah. It's brutal, but it's that admiration because, you know, he comes back kicking at the end of it.
And he's still taking ridiculous bumps to this day, Joe. I don't know what Sasuke is made of, what like his makeup is, what he eats and drinks to manage to just defy the medical science the way he does, but he's still doing it.
Him and Tanaka, just carved out of titanium, non-breakable something or other, like just, yeah. Should by all rights be in a wheelchair, both of them at this point.
I just assumed Sasuke's neck is like made of rubber, so it's just you know, he takes these ungodly like things on it and just keeps going, just bounces back.
Yeah, we jinxed him now. He's gonna get like horrendously hurt in some match and it'll be all our fault, but
I hope not. Very much
no, absolutely. The other thing I was just gonna say, like, also is. Obviously, the art with this capturing both their masks, which is really, really cool, and obviously super important in this kind of context as well, given it's like a masked man tournament.
Yeah, I liked it because it was. There's a really nice close-up kind of thing, And yeah, it gives you a nice bit of detail on both of the masks. I've got to say, both of these have got to be two of the coolest mask designs of all time.
Yes.
But also, I thought it like sort of told the story of this match a little bit of like Dos Caras just kind of like bullying Sasuke throughout, but Sasuke just sort of, no matter what, you know, willing his way back right to the end. So yeah, there's something I liked about that, but I was pretty happy with this one. So yeah, thanks, man.
Yeah, no, it was very sick. Actually, I thought Dos Caras' look in this, the blue with the silver, was tight. And he even looked like he had sort of the double eagles on his knee pads as well, as far as I could see on his tights. Like, yeah, just a very, very cool look.
It's such a beautiful, like, intricate mask. I was actually, like, looking up, like, other, you know, close-ups of the mask to get a bit more detailed, and, you know, sometimes the fuzzy footage you can, you know, miss out on a little bit of the detail that's going on with the masks. And I was looking up some other ones, and just, like, such a cool design, such a ridiculously intricate design. And I guess, like, being, you know, part of that that Mil Máscaras family, like, they just have really good taste. That's part of the family lineage there.
It does remind me, just because of the shape of it, of the Super Porky mask before he's, you know, because you got the two
eagles with the arms.
Yeah, just similar kind of just shape to it. Not the same, obviously, very different, but like, just that swept back, coming off the eyes sort of thing is very cool.
Yeah, I always wondered whether the Patriot mask was inspired by this one, the classic early to mid-90s All Japan and WWF character played by Del Wilkes. I always thought that was like a really cool mask with like the American Eagle and everything. A lot of similarities there between that and this one as well.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But yeah, tremendous match. Would highly recommend it to everyone. And this has really kicked off a bit of a deep dive that I really got into Sasuke there for a little bit. And yeah, now just talking about it, I kind of want to go back and watch some more Sasuke matches, because, man, great Sasuke. It was incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That brings us to the end of our trio here. All of said matches can be found on christhings.com.au. You can check out the little write-ups that I did, and you can also procure fancy art prints of said matches if you feel like doing such things. I'd like to thank everyone here for listening today. I'd like to also thank the great team at Social Suplex. It keeps the lights on for this podcast, allows us to do this thing. I don't know how many episodes we're in now, but I feel like it's a decent amount. Socialsuplex.com, the hub for this thing, home of this podcast, as well as a variety of other fun wrestling podcasts, from One Nation Radio to Keeping It Strong Style, to the Trish and Sarah podcast. We've got Tunnel Talk, we've got Imps WWE Adventure, we've got All Things Elite, there's a Joshi podcast on there now, just all the things. So thank you, Social Suplex. Thank you, everyone at home, for keeping up with this thing, for supporting the podcast, for supporting my art, and also thank you so much, my friend Joe. Thank you for joining us here today.
Always a pleasure, mate.
So good. Well, I'm going to get started on this painting. it's about 20 past 9 here right now in our time. So we'll see. It might be a bit of a late one.
Yeah, mate. Well, best of luck with it. And I'll catch you at the Mariachi El Bronx gig.
Heck yeah. Looking forward to it, my dude.
Hell yeah.
I'll catch you later. And I'll see everyone listening out there in podcast land in a couple of weeks. Farewell. Do the hammer lock. All right. Lovely. I do the hammer lock. Do the hammer lock, you turkey necks. Yeah, do the hammer lock. I do the hammer lock.
Does your body hurt more than it used to after a long day? You're not getting old. You're not out of shape. You're just absorbing too much impact. Every step on hard floors adds up, and eventually your feet, knees, or back start calling the shots. That's not age. That's physics. Most shoes aren't built to handle a full day of impact. Until now. Stand Plus Energy Recovery Footwear is engineered to dissipate shock and reduce stress on joints. Their dual-density system gives you cushioning where you need relief and structure where it matters. They're accepted by the American Podiatric Medical Association, HSA and FSA eligible, and worn by over 100,000 people who feel the difference every day. If recovery is becoming the limiter, it's time to change that. Go to standshoes.com and experience real relief in every step.